Z-Trim Appetite Control is perfect for taking the edge off hunger.
I lost 6 pounds the first week and never felt hungry.
I lost a full pant size.
I've lost 15 pounds in 2 months without dieting.
Without dieting.
You're hearing the success stories of people who have discovered Z-Trim Appetite Control. Developed by the USDA, all-natural Z-Trim helps you feel satisfied before you eat more than you should.
I can breeze through work without distracting hunger pains.
I don't have to exercise, and I still eat the foods that I love.
Z-Trim Appetite Control is a healthy way to help manage your weight regardless of diet or exercise.
I simply take 2 capsules before each meal.
Z-Trim Appetite Control is fantastic.
For people who need to manage their weight with limited physical activity, Z-Trim provides a naturally healthy option.
To order Z-Trim Appetite Control capsules made with USDA-developed Z-Trim, go to ztrim.com. That's ztrim.com. And enter the code word NATURAL for a 10% listener discount. Or call 1-877-MY-Z-Trim. The only thing you have to lose is weight.
And he also said we're not losing. So what you may have are two guys who are looking at different definitions. I don't know, and I want to try to read their minds.
Wait till you hear the sound we have for you tonight. Good evening, True Seekers. Malloy here. It's about 7 past the hour. Thanks for tuning in. Robert Gates. Smoother than Peter Pan peanut butter. Did you watch any of this today? He won over the Senate Armed Service Committee Democrats, all 11 of them, with his, quote, refreshing and honest, end quote, and very anti-Bush comments about how we're, quote, not winning, close quote, the war in Iraq. I guess that's the diplomatic way or the newspeak way of saying losing. Tony Snow is very confused. We have some comments from Tony Snow that you are going to find so irritating you're going to want to put your thumbs in your eye sockets and push your eyeballs out, but we advise against that because, you know, we're 3 weeks from Christmas here. But Tony Snow had to come out and apply a liberal, pardon the expression, greasy, slimy, slippery coating of super spin to Bob Gates' comments, which totally contradicted what Chucklenuts has been saying over and over and over about winning in Iraq. See, this is Pappy Bush. This is why Pappy Bush cried yesterday in the Florida House of Representatives. What a head of a crime family. What a wimp.
My son Sham got defeated in 94. And
now we know why he was crying, because they sent Robert Gates to take Junior to the woodshed and whip his ass. And Junior got his ass whipped on national television today during the hearings. Well, Robert Gates sat there taking care of the business that Bush Sr., Kissinger, James Baker III, and the rest of these people sent him to do. You'll pardon the expression, but George Bush got bitch slapped all around Washington, D.C. today. Just it was like a pimp beating a whore. Now, I'm sorry, because I don't like violence of any sort, and I have nothing but respect for sex workers, not the pimps. But that's what it reminded me of. Bam! Bitch, I took, bam! Why don't you say, bam! Stop hitting me! Bam! Shut up! How's come you're not out on BAM? Just knocking the bejesus out of him, right? On and on and on and on. Gates just, I would imagine, where was Bush today? What's Bush doing today? Was he talking to another Iraqi?
No, actually, he came out and stood about 8 feet away from Gates and pointed at him and said they'd had a very productive breakfast.
Yeah, he could tell that because he heaved it all back up and took a look at it once Gates started testifying. Oh, that was a productive breakfast. This is just unbelievable to watch, isn't it? Now, I know you were working today or you were otherwise occupied and you didn't have a chance to hear this. When these kinds of days come up, I swear to God, you should either TiVo it or set your CD or your DVD recorder or tape recorder or whatever you use. This is astonishing stuff. The most corrupt government in the history of the United States, that of George Walker Bush, who has taken us into two wars that are absolutely unnecessary, miserable failures. He has destroyed the Constitution. He has gutted everything. I mean, this is astonishing. Until finally his old man, this doddering old fool, has to send in Robert Gates.
You're going to have to go up there and stop my boy. I'm going to stay down here in Tallahassee and cry about Jeb and his wife who tries to smuggle stuff in from France. You know why I'm crying? I got the goddamnedest bunch of boys. They're all just so rotten and lousy. And I'm married to this old white-haired hag. And she calls me an old fart. It's awful. You ought to see what it's like inside this family at Christmas.
Oh, this is disgusting. This is pathetic. This is ridiculous. But it is funny as hell. Oh, my God, except for one fact. Thousands of people, tens of thousands of people have died because of these psycho clowns. Hundreds of thousands have been permanently wounded, damaged, destroyed because of these miserable bastards. I can't get my mind around this. I can't. Oh, got a couple new websites for you. Let me just back up for a second, all right? Marty in Illinois sent in one and Greg sent in one. Write it down, okay? Where do you hear this stuff? Jesus. JustCoffeeArt.com. Like a cup of coffee, JustCoffeeArt.com. What an amazing site. Go check it out, JustCoffeeArt.com. Now, see, who's going to hear about these websites unless somebody, turns you onto it, you know, says, hey, you got to check this out. That's what we're doing here. I mean, it's got to have a unique quality to it for us to mention it in this little bit that we're doing. There's another one here, officialwire.com. That is a news site, and I know I've given you a couple of news sites, but officialwire.com. It's a good one, but this justcoffeeart.com is also, I don't want to say weird because, you know, it's not weird. It's what it says it is. It's art drawn with coffee. You ought to see it. It's great. A couple of emails here very quickly from Michael in Roswell, New Mexico. Mike, just a note on Reagan's Iran-Contra memory. We were talking about this the other night because Gates has no memory of what happened. Neither did Reagan. What happened in a 10-year-long period in U.S. history where we determined that once again we had to go to Central America and slaughter a couple hundred thousand brown people because they were pissing us off with their determination to go for, oh, liberation theology, can't have any of that, and, socialism, oh, Jesus, and communism, can't have that, nationalization of their own natural resources, oh, no, can't have that. So we decided to go down there and kill a couple hundred thousand, and we did. You and I did. You and I didn't pull any triggers, but we did it. The rest of the world holds us responsible. Gates was in it up to his eyeballs. So was Reagan. So was every single Republican during the 80s, and not a few Democrats. Anyway, Michael writes, Mike, just a note on Reagan's Iran-Contra memory. The instance you cite was an interview with the Iran-Contra prosecutor, Lawrence Walsh. What I mentioned the other night was that Reagan testified after he was out of office. I mean, he just went on and on and on and on and on in 88 or 89, question after question. Oh, I don't recall. I don't have any recollection of that. No, I don't recall. Michael writes, while Reagan claimed a memory loss akin to Gates's, it was clear to Walsh, as he wrote in the final report, that Reagan truthfully had no recollection of even fundamental aspects of the matter. Reagan's mental problems were evident to Walsh, and he intimated such in the language he used. That's not the case with Gates's conveniently deficient memory, of which many of his colleagues described as photographic or eidetic. Someone said yesterday that, in reality, Gates has a photogenic memory. He remembers the pretty version of events. Cheers, Michael and Roswell. Thanks, Michael. Got a couple working on the chain just for me, but I gotta keep my game tight like Corey on game. I like taking from a don't know no better. I know that ain't right. I've seen people kill, I've seen people deal, I've seen people live in poverty, lived on wheels. It's not where I live, but this is how it is. It might be new to you, but it
was.
The Mike Malloy Show, because each time you listen to Right Wing Radio, God kills a kitten.
Past the hour. Cindy, emails in and says the links are up for the Gates hearing at c-span.org, and you can tune in anytime after this program is over. c-span.org for the Gates hearing. You've got to watch some of it.
More importantly, go to whitehouse.gov and click on the daily press briefing and at least read the transcript if you don't want to suffer through the actual
visuals. Tony Snow, yeah.
That's even more
incredible.
Unbelievable.
One more here. Email, two more actually. The subject line is George Insane. This is from Charles, who is our Southern Fairfield County, Connecticut Bureau Chief. Charles writes, Mike, when the coast was clear and Daddy Bush was shown the door in 1992, the rats of the Reagan sinking ship felt free to disclose in their time that Ronnie was not only not up to snuff physically, but mentally as early as the beginning of the second year of the first term. It was known Reagan was already well ensconced in the beginnings of Alzheimer's. Remember how he would tell us of his wonderful war stories, the soldiers he had just met the night before? These were movies he had been shown the previous evening. He regularly fell asleep in briefings as well. When questioned in Iran-Contra, he didn't really know where or who he was. Knowing all this, the Republicans not only kept saying that Ronnie had single-handedly invented health, what? Putting someone this far gone for a second term seems treasonous to me. So, acknowledge that George W. is certifiable? Who's going to do that? That would be viewed merely as a liberal internet conspiracy drafted by Alec Baldwin. Yeah, that's true. And this from Andrew in New York. Hi, Mike. Just want to make a few comments about the caller named Leonard, who was on your program last night. I feel Leonard should keep telling his strong and truthful message to anyone who will listen. Leonard has a powerful voice, passion, and message. Talking is what led to the Democratic victory this past November. Due to the lack of numerous responsible television news organizations, talking was a chief operator in the equation of striking back at the corporate-owned propaganda Fourth Estate with the truth. Leonard, keep doing what you are doing. Talking has worked, albeit slower than we all would have liked, and verbal discourse will continue to be effective in illustrating to the American public the true state of Republican-controlled American government and what it will take to begin reversing the damage done by the GOP. Leonard, I salute your military service in the United States. I salute your military service, and I especially salute the verbal battles that you are waging against the current tyrannical and insane GOP leadership in these United States of America. All right, Leonard was a caller last night who expressed some real frustration. He said, Dr. Mike Newcomb on KPHX. There's a WPCH here, and I get them confused. KPHX, which is our flagship station. Dr. Mike Newcomb, and he referred to me. Leonard did. And he said, you guys, you know, do so much. And my point was, no, we don't. We just talk, just like Leonard is doing. And that was the reason for that email. So, and I agree with the emailer that talking, just talking among ourselves, just inspiring Democrats, normal people, progressives. And if a conservative wants to drop the garbage and realize what his party has done to this country, I guess in the spirit of survival, it would probably be good to include him or her in the discussion, if that's possible. I don't think that's possible, but it may be. I want to toss this out before the break, and when we come back, we're going to start this sound. UN. It's the World Institute for Development Economics Research of the United States, of the United Nations, just released a poll. 2% of adults, 2% of adults command more than half of the world's wealth, while the bottom 50% of the world's population possesses just 1%. Think about that. Think about that. And my emailer, Patriot, said this, not gay sex, is the greatest abomination. Surely God did not mean his creatures to do this to one another. We'll come back to that a little bit later. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. And you've got to hear this sound. Excuse me. You've got to hear it. Stay with us. About 25 before the hour. You know, I mentioned last night, watch to see how the Democrats respond to Gates. Well, okay, that's over. The Senate Armed Services Committee passed him out to the full Senate by unanimous vote. There were 13 Republicans and 11 Democrats on that committee. I don't know how many people voted today out of those 24. But it was unanimous. Which, I don't know. I don't think is a very good sign, unless Rumsfeld is so bad, has been so bad, and I think he has, that Satan himself would be an improvement, which may not be far off the mark, But Gates is a liar. Gates believes in the unbridled use of force. Gates believes in war without a declaration of war. Gates believes in unitary executive branch, just like the rest of these thugs, that Congress is an irritation. Gates was instrumental in bypassing Congress and the American people in the 80s to set up arms for hostages, missiles, the money from the sale of which that passed through brokers and Israelis and God knows who, Iranians, until finally it was used to murder people in Nicaragua, El Salvador, Honduras. Gates is another one. Is there nobody in the upper echelons of the Republican Party, whether it is Pappy Bush's Republican Party or, I guess that's the only Republican Party really that's around that has any political power? Is there no one? And the answer is no. Every single one of them is dirty. Every single one of them. In the 40 years that the Republicans were without power in the United States government, without real power. Actually, it wasn't quite 40, was it? From 1964 until 1980, roughly. During that period of time, the ruling cadre of upper-level Republicans cut their teeth on some of the most vicious, dirty dealings on the planet. Wars and murders and assassinations and tortures and disappearances that you and I will never hear of unless we just dig and dig and dig to find it. Gates is one of the people who was involved in that. And to listen to some of the members of the Senate panel today, Democrat and Republican, I mean, the Republicans is understandable because they are thuggish, murderous bastards. But to listen to these United States senators praising this man, it was a little bit more than I could take. Once again, as is usually the case, I watched the first 20 minutes and said, Kathy, can't do it. Let's listen. After Gates' opening remarks, in which he acknowledges that the mismanagement of Iraq is the reason he's being considered for this job, Carl Levin, who will be the chairman of this committee starting next month, and why don't they wait? Why don't they just wait until January for this hearing? Rumsfeld's had his wings clipped. Nobody in the military establishment's going to listen to this old vampire again. He's got to be put back in the box and covered up with the ancient dirt and left to rot for another 100 years. They'll bring him back some other time. Why are these hearings and confirmation being held now, huh? Makes you wonder, doesn't it? Carl Levin got right to that point. The mismanagement of Iraq, with a blunt question about winning the war in Iraq. And of course, later we'll play for you. Poor Tony Snow had a heck of a job massaging this answer into something the White House could spin as good news on Iraq. But first, Levin asked this.
Mr. Gates, do you believe that we are currently winning in Iraq?
No, sir.
Now, the chairman has asked you about a comment of the president that we are going to stay in Iraq as long as the Iraqis ask us to be there. Doesn't such an open-ended commitment send a message to the Iraqis that somehow or other it is our responsibility as to whether or not they achieve a nation, rather than it is their responsibility to reach a political settlement?
It seems to me that the United States is going to have some presence in Iraq for a long time. The Iraqi forces clearly have no logistical capability of their own. They have no air power of their own. So the United States, clearly, even if whatever changed approach or strategy we come up with, the president implements, works, we are still going to have some level of American support there for the Iraqi military. And that could take quite some time, but it could be with a dramatically smaller number of U.S. forces than are there today.
Now, that's just the first example of the kind of non-propaganda talk that I, being charitable, I would assume won these Senate Democrats over. The fact that for the first time since this psychopathic Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, and George Bush took our country to war and destroyed another nation, finished destroying another nation, this is the first time anyone has spoken truthfully. But Senator Levin's question doesn't such an open-ended commitment send a message to the Iraqis that somehow or other it is our responsibility, blah, blah, blah. Well, Senator Levin, with all due respect, somehow or other, it is our responsibility. We went into a country that, granted, had a nutball for a dictatorial leader, but he was maintaining power because of our policies since 1992, 1991. We set the whole thing up for misery and the destruction of the Iraqi middle class. And then we go charging in a second time after 10 long years of economic sanctions and destroy the country, just beat it into a pulp, a mass of bloody bodies, non-functioning infrastructure, insanity, madness, chaos, blood, murder, death. Yeah, Senator Levin, I think it is our responsibility. Now, how we handle that is something else again. And no, I don't have any ideas at all. I've never seen anything like this in my life. I don't have a template that I can refer to. In my life, the experience of the United States in Iraq is unique. I've never seen anything like this. So with all due respect, Senator Levin, yeah, we're going to be there a long time. You're damn right we are. And we have a moral responsibility. We have engineered and orchestrated the slaughter of only Allah knows how many Iraqis. And after 8,000 years, we moved in and destroyed their civilization. Jesus, God, I can't, you know, listening to these people talk as though, okay, there's a problem here, and, you know, being the United States, with all of our resources and assets, we've got to help. It just makes me want to scream. Because we did this. We did this. Going back to George Herbert Walker, whiny-ass, crying Bush, we did this. Going back to Reagan, we did this. Remember the pictures of Rumsfeld and Saddam shaking hands, closing the deal on weapons of mass destruction to murder Iranians and to murder Kurds. Kurds, too, to please our Turkish allies. Jesus, God, we did this! So when Senator Levin says, yeah, well, we have responsibility, yeah, you bet your boots we have responsibility, Senator. But it's a responsibility that we will never, ever get off the books. We have done to Iraq essentially what Hitler did to Poland. You know it, and I know it. No point beating around the bush about it. All right, more of this when we come back. The Senate Armed Services Committee hearings to determine whether or not to recommend Robert Gates to the full Senate. And as you know by now, it was passed unanimously. Yeah, we think he's great. Rise up.
death, yeah. Poor people gonna rise up and take what's there.
Here's your nightly ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. We are listening to testimony today in the Senate Armed Services Committee hearings on Robert Gates. Now, next in the barrel would be presidential hopeful John McCain. He gets his turn at the microphone and verifies the answer Gates just gave Levin about losing the war in Iraq and the Iraq Study Group conclusion that the Bush, Romney, Rice, Powell, Cheney cabal didn't send in enough troops to secure Iraq from the get-go.
I'd like to follow on just what Senator Levin said. We are not winning the war in Iraq. Is that correct?
That is my view, yes, sir.
And therefore, the status quo is not acceptable.
That is correct, sir.
I know you did a great deal of work with the Iraq Study Group. Do you agree that at the time of the invasion, we didn't have sufficient troops to control the country in hindsight?
I suspect in hindsight some of the folks in the administration probably would not make the same decisions that they made. And I think one of those is that there clearly were insufficient troops in Iraq after the initial invasion to establish control over the country.
See, that line of questioning really makes my skin crawl. Because what McCain is suggesting and what Gates is responding to is that we should have had a larger invasion force. No, gentlemen, excuse me. I'm sorry. We shouldn't have been there to begin with. There shouldn't have been one American soldier. Not one. Not half a million. Didn't anybody learn any, and that wouldn't have worked either. Didn't anyone, any of these thugs, these morons, McCain especially, whose mind is like jello, didn't they learn anything from Vietnam? Can't they take a look at the French model in Algeria?
Oh, well, we should have had more troops. That would have been okay then.
Tony Snow sure had his work cut out for him after these answers today. And I've got to believe that poor old Pappy Bush stopped sobbing over Jeb as soon as Robert Gates took the mic this morning. I bet these answers perked him right up. What a foobard family. It's just astonishing. We got time for one more? This Q&A really gets me. McCain asked if the size of the military needs to be increased. Now, bear in mind, no one in the Bush crime family, not even the most insignificant consigliere or lieutenant, has admitted that there's anything lacking in this proud all-volunteer army. So listen to this blasphemy from Pappy's boy here, who suggests that, yes, more troops are needed, and we need to stop abusing the troops we already have in combat. Wow!
There were some of us 3.5 years ago that said we needed to increase the size of the Army and the Marine Corps. And the answer was, well, that would take a couple of years. Well, years have passed, and we still haven't got, and we're still putting an enormous strain on the active duty and guard forces. Do you believe that we need to increase the size of the Marine Corps and the Army?
Senator, if I'm confirmed, I'm very open to the possibility of and the necessity of an increase in the end strength of the Army. I would like to, if I'm confirmed, to first of all ensure for myself that the other 350,000 troops in the regular Army are doing what we want them to be doing, and that they are all needed in the roles that they are in, and as a way of making sure that before we increase the end strength, that we're using the strength we have in the way we ought to be. But if the answer to that question is that's about the way it ought to be, that those troops are deployed in the way we want them deployed, then I'm very open to the possibility of an increase in the end strength.
And I was listening to an interview on NPR today, All Things Considered. Barry McCaffrey was there, the retired general, an old warmonger of the highest order. And he was asked about the United States Army and United States Marine Corps and increasing troop strength. And McCaffrey said, there is no more. There's no one left. And McCaffrey and another general was there, retired, and they were very pissed off, incensed, furious that the military strength of the United States has been flushed down the toilet. How many times in the past 20 years have you heard as a campaign ploy, the Democrats have gutted the military. The Democrats have destroyed the military. Well, you have seen it up front and close in the past 4 years, only it wasn't Democrats. It was these murderous, incompetent freaks in the Republican Party. There is no military left from which to draw more troops. It's gone. It's gone. My God, he says, I'm very open to the possibility of an increase in the end strength. What the hell is an end strength? How are you going to do it, boys? Are you going to ask more American youth to give it all up and go fight your goddamn filthy wars? Is that what you're going to do? It's not going to work. Because if it were to work, it would be working now. And you can't even meet quotas. So what are you going to do? What are you going to do, Mr. Gates? What are you going to do, Senator McCain? What are you going to do, Barry McCaffrey? You know, there's a lot of young Americans that don't want to go die in your filthy, stinking wars. They want to stay here and stay alive and maybe have children and maybe have a career and a life. So how are you going to do it, boys? Huh? I got a phone number for you. I don't have it right here at the tips of my fingers, but I'm sure you thugs can get it. It's Charlie Rangel's phone number. Call him up. He's got an idea for you. Welcome back. 6:30 past the hour. We're right in the middle. If you're on hold, we will definitely get to your call. But we're right in the middle of these sound bites from today's Senate Armed Service Committee hearings to determine the future as Secretary of Defense of Robert Gates, who that's already been determined. It was determined when Pappy Bush made sure that he was sent up to Washington to bitch slap his son, and the Republican as well as the Democratic power establishment decided, okay, now we mentioned the other night that there was a trade-off. The Democrats said, all right, we'll take Gates, but we want you to dump Bolton, you know, make it look like he's resigning. Another pact with the devil. Again, don't understand, but I am not a policy wonk. I'm a talk show host. But I don't understand why the Democrats on this committee, or the Democrats in the Senate, who are going to confirm this guy, Gates, don't seem to care that he's a liar, that he traded TOW missiles to the Iranians in exchange for the release of hostages and money, which was then funneled to Iran, counter-revolutionary, the terrorists, the real terrorists in Nicaragua, the Contras. It was set up by ex-generals like John Singlaub and ex-murderous, insane colonels like Oliver North and ex-psychopathic admirals like John Poindexter. The Contras were set up. And the American people and the American Congress said, no, we're not going to do this. We're not going to fund a war that may suck us into Central America. And what did Robert Gates, how did Robert Gates respond? How did most Republicans respond? Oh, that's okay. We'll just do it this way. We will tell you that we don't deal with terrorists, but in the meantime, we will be trading missiles. Missiles! For cash. And the release of hostage. We don't negotiate with hostage takers. Oh, yes, we do. Over and over and over again. Republicans do. So here's Gates, a guy who was in this up to his eyeballs, sitting there today, and the little bit that I watched, it was like, oh, Jesus, God, who taught you? What drama coach sat you down prior to these hearings, Gates, and told you to put a look of sincere intensity on your face? Was there any questions, Kathy, about Iran-Contra? Anything at all? Did anyone bring up it? Did Hillary Clinton? Did anyone? Not that you saw. Well, we'll have to take a look at the entire transcript at some point. Senator Robert Byrd stepped outside the Iraq box and asked some forward-thinking questions about what Gates thinks about a possible U.S. preemptive strike against Iran or Syria. I guess Byrd wanted to get Gates on the record in case Bush does plan in his madness, and Cheney in his madness, some sort of an attack on some axis of evil nation.
Would you say that an attack on either Iran or Syria would worsen the violence in Iraq and lead to greater American casualties?
Yes, sir. I think that's very likely.
Your answer is yes on both questions.
Yes, sir. Very likely. I think it would immensely complicate our relationships with virtually every country in the region.
Even Israel? Uh-oh. That answer's not going to win any friends in the peanut crowd, Gates. Be careful. And as far as Senator Byrd is concerned, maybe there should be some mechanism inside a man's head or a woman's head that says, you know, I'm too old to be doing this. I have great respect for age. I really do. I hope I live to be old and incontinent and senile, and you know, but I would never sit behind a microphone and say, it's 11 minutes past the hour, and this is hey, this is Novem Radio.
Hasn't stopped Don Imus.
No, Imus is not that bad. And I don't think that someone who is making policy decisions for the United States, all due respect, Senator Byrd, hey, listen, you make great speeches, but usually after you make a great speech, you vote just the opposite that I would think that your great speech would have indicated. You're a great, have great rhetoric. You're the Cicero of the Senate. You're a brilliant man where it concerns the Constitution. But for Christ's sake, retire! My God, let somebody younger, let somebody 75 in there. Or 80. I'm sorry, Senator Byrd, you are making life and death decisions for the entire planet.
Would you say it's time for lunch?
Oh, come on. Again, I have great respect for old people. I hope to be one someday. I mean, real old. Like Bird. But not in that position. Oh, my God, here he is again. Now, listen to this truth-telling from Mr. Gates about who's responsible for the war on terror to begin with and the lies that have been spread about this misbegotten war from day one. I'll bet George W.'s head exploded just about this time in Gates' testimony. On the other hand, how in the hell would George W. Bush know what Gates was saying? And he doesn't care anyway. But here's Senator Byrd again. Oh, come on, Senator Byrd, please, please.
Within 8 months of taking Baghdad, our troops captured Saddam Hussein.
That's a little better.
However, 5 years after 9/11 and the invasion of Afghanistan, Osama bin Laden is still on the loose. Who was responsible, Dr. Gates, in your judgment, for the 9/11 attacks? Saddam Hussein or Osama bin Laden?
Osama bin Laden, Senator.
No.
Over the past 5 years, who has represented the greater threat to the United States? Saddam Hussein or Osama bin Laden?
Osama bin Laden.
No.
My time is up. But what is wrong with our current tactics, which have allowed Osama bin Laden to escape justice for 5 years and continuing?
Senator, I would make it a priority to find out what our tactics have been and the efforts that we have had underway if I am confirmed for this position.
What? What? I don't know what you just said, doctor. You are a doctor, are you? Okay, I'm a doctor. I got this itch down here. I got one more question for you, Dr. Gates, but I forgot it. Can I have a cookie? No, it's the wrong time for that. All right. I'm sorry, no disrespect intended. I hope I get to be as old as Robert Byrd, but not to where I'm sitting anywhere where people can hear me making massive decisions about who is going to be the next Secretary of Defense. Sorry, Robert. Sorry, you're a good man. But you need to go back to West Virginia and dig holes or something. You really do need to get the hell out of the Senate. Didn't he just get reelected for another 6 years? What's he going to be, 120 when he finally... And who is that other old southern bastard? Who is that guy from South Carolina?
And the Ayatollah bought a nuclear warship if he dies and wants to go out in style. And there's nothing to eat that don't carry the stink of some waste dumped in the Nile. But one thing is certainly true, no one here knows what to do, and I'm sick of you.
I know there's a lot of speculation that these reports in Washington mean there's going to be some kind of graceful exit out of Iraq. We're going to stay in Iraq to get the job done.
Oh, Jesus. Back to the Senate Armed Service Committee hearing on Robert Gates. And as you know by now, he was unanimously passed up the food chain from the Senate Armed Service Committee to the full Senate. That means he is the next Secretary of Defense. Now, here comes Ted Kennedy, who made the argument about Iraq very personal and reminded us all what's really at stake in this confirmation hearing. This is a long Q&A, but you need to hear this. Either he's the best politician I've ever heard, and remember his own CIA and Iran-Contra heritage here. I'm talking about Gates. Or he sincerely wants to be the best Secretary of Defense to get us out of the morass this boy toy president created. Listen to this, and you decide.
We have lost 60 soldiers in my state of Massachusetts. I've talked with just about every one of them. And they're really interested in hearing from you about whether you're going to be an independent figure that's really going to fight for the best in terms of our security as we find our security today. We know since you have been nominated now, 59 Americans have been killed just in the 27 days since you've been nominated. In the 27 days just prior to that, 92 Americans were killed. And in the 27 days prior to that, 81 Americans were killed. And what the families want is to make sure that we are going to have a policy that is worthy of their valor and their bravery. And they're looking at you.
Senator Kennedy, the 12 graduates of Texas A&M have been killed in Iraq. I would run in the morning with some of those kids. I'd have lunch with them. They'd share with me their aspirations and their hopes. I'd hand them their degree, I'd attend their commissioning, and then I would get word of their death. So this all comes down to being very personal for all of us. The statistics, 2,889 killed in Iraq as of yesterday morning. That's a big number, but every single one of them represents not only an individual tragedy for the soldier who's been killed, but for their entire family and their friends, and I see this. Somebody asked me about the pressures of this hearing, and I said the pressures of the hearing are nothing compared to the pressures I got from a woman who came over to me at the hotel while I was having dinner the other night, seated by myself, and she asked if I was Mr. Gates, and I said yes. She congratulated me on my nomination, and she said, I have two sons in Iraq. For God's sake, bring them home safe, and we'll be praying for you. Now, that's real pressure. Senator, I am not giving up the presidency of Texas A&M, the job that I probably enjoyed more than any that I've ever had, making considerable personal financial sacrifice and, frankly, going through this process to come back to Washington to be a bump on a log and not to say exactly what I think, and to speak candidly and, frankly, boldly to people both at both ends of Pennsylvania Avenue about what I believe and what I think needs to be done. I intend to listen closely to people. I intend to draw my own conclusions, and I'll make my recommendations. But I can assure you that I don't owe anybody anything. And I've come back here to do the best I can for the men and women in uniform and for the country in terms of these difficult problems that we face.
Well, you don't owe anybody anything, really? See, I'd like to take that at face value, but I've got a problem, and that is I know this man's history. I know what he did for Pappy Bush. And I'm reasonably certain that the only reason he is sitting at this confirmation hearing is because of Pappy Bush. I'm also reasonably certain that the only reason he wound up with the presidency of Texas A&M is because of Pappy Bush. Maybe I'm wrong. And if I am, no problem. I'm wrong about damn near everything when it comes to these politicians. But I am so weary of the sadness and the despair and the negativity that hangs over this country because of the killing and the dying. And I'm desperate for an end to this madness. I'm there's part of me hoping against hope
that this guy has somehow had his road to Damascus conversion, and he's not lying, and that he will do something. If I could look ahead and see Gates making it stop, I'd support his nomination in a heartbeat.
Let me ask you one question. Is your money that good? Or will it buy you forgiveness? Do you think that it could? I think you will find, when your death takes its toll,
he's a liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's More Mike Malloy.
26 before the hour. A couple of quick emails here. Cool Andrew writes, if we consider Bush Sr.'s misgivings on the war and his opposition to that war, Gates probably is a good selection. Remember, initially, Bush Sr. said he would never have entered Baghdad. Plus, recent stories indicate he has a lot of regrets about Junior taking office.
But he cried about Jeb.
And this from Reggie. Carl Levin did bring up Iran-Contra today. Okay. When questioned about his version of events, Gates made a remark suggesting that Walsh, the former special prosecutor until he was fired by Pappy Bush, I think it was Pappy Bush, challenged that and referred to Walsh's book in which he challenged that version. Here's a summary in The Guardian of the UK. An issue that dogged Gates during his final years at the CIA, the Iran-Contra affair, rose at Tuesday's hearing only after about 4 hours on other matters. Levin, who was among 31 senators who voted against Gates to become CIA chief in 1991, raised it. During his CIA confirmation hearing in 1991, Gates faced doubts that he had told all he knew about the 1986 affair in which the Reagan administration secretly sold arms to Iran in hopes of freeing hostages in Lebanon, then used profits from the sales to help the Contra rebels in Nicaragua against congressional orders. Levin noted the doubts about the reliability of Gates' memory on this issue, but he also said it was important to know that the independent counsel, Walsh, who investigated Iran-Contra, is now supporting Gates' nomination. Thanks, Reg. you can look at that one of several ways. The first way, of course, is the obvious. Washington is nothing but a nest of sluts and pigs, Democrats and Republicans, who play the power game and move the chess pieces around and really don't give a tinker's damn about death and destruction or the security of the country or keeping the hell out of other people's, you know, just a bunch of liars, thieves, and knaves. Or you can take a higher road, I guess, a different approach, which would be that maybe Gates has been sent by someone who, certainly not Kissinger, certainly not Scowcroft, who are part of the Bush Sr. cabal. Somebody sent him who? Jesus? I don't know. Maybe somebody sent him to try to disengage the United States from a war, an occupation that only has one outcome. More and more and more dead Americans. There is no other outcome. Iraq has been turned into a charnel house, a huge funnel that leads straight into hell. And it's been created by Cheney, Bush, and Rumsfeld. The Muslim world has an inexhaustible supply of young people who are willing to go to Iraq and blow themselves into pieces in order, when they accept whatever the brainwashing these sick, degenerate mullahs and imams and madrasas pump into their heads, they're willing to go die Because in blowing up, suicide bombing, and so on and so forth, they believe this bat snot about, oh, well, I get to go to paradise. No, you don't! You hit a brick wall. You end. Oh, that's going to work, Malloy. Yeah, that'll convince him. And that inexhaustible supply of young Muslims will make damn good and sure that this war of attrition, which is what this has become against the American forces, it is an abattoir, a charnel house, a slaughterhouse. Every single day, another 30, 40, 50, 60 innocent Iraqis, I guess, blown into red mist. And every single day, like drip, 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 three more Americans dead, five more Americans dead, seven more Americans dead, two more Americans dead, drip, drip, drip. And that's the way it's going to go. That's the way it's going to go. Every single day that we have forces in Iraq, every single day, from now until hell freezes over, there is no other way this is going to go. And you know this, truth seeker, and I know this, and the United States military knows this, and the politicians who still have the sense God gave a bag of doorknobs knows this. So maybe, I don't believe I'm saying this, maybe Gates is the answer. Because there is no winning. There's nothing to win. What the hell are we supposed to win? Let me make one thing perfectly clear, with all due respect to people in that part of the world. They don't do democracy. Ever! And it is not going to be imposed upon them. They are 12th century religious tribal people. They don't want this. They don't want democracy. They don't want the disgusting horror of women voting. They don't want the disgusting horror of equality between the sexes. They don't want the disgusting horror of secularism. And they will die. There's a billion of them, and they will continue to die until the Americans get out. And they will continue to kill each other and Americans. That's just the way it is. Now, this disgusting Tony Snow. At the briefing today, Snow stands up there and has to deal with the questions about the Senate hearings after Gates made so many statements that just totally contradicted Bush's no graceful exits, you know, Bush's Iraq tough Texan talk. Boy, did Tony take this job at the wrong time, huh? Should have gone in right after IRA when Bush's numbers were still above 50%, you dumb jerk. Reporters asked about the Iraq study group report. What will Bush do now that the results are in and withdrawal is recommended? Reporter says, this is the season of reviews, and at the end of which the president is going to speak to the American people and say, I've seen all of this, this has all come in, and here's the way forward in Iraq. Is the Baker Report and the internal reviews that accompany the Baker Report over the next couple of weeks an opportunity for the president to redefine what the job in Iraq is? Some people have been suggesting, Tony, that that means a major course correction.
I'm going to let the president make his own decisions. You're assuming that there's a decision sitting on the shelf that we're just waiting for a convenient time to unveil.
No, I'm not.
Well, to characterize it as such would mean that there is that we already know exactly what the president's going to decide. I don't know, Jim. I do know that what he's going to do is to take as thorough, careful, and thoughtful a look as possible and try to work on the way forward. I know that that is not as detailed as you'd like, but on the other hand, the president really does have a lot. He still has to receive his reviews from within the administration, and he has yet to see the Baker-Hamilton report.
Just one more shot at this, Tony. So after the election, the midterms election,
yeah,
and after these two or three or four reviews that are coming in, there are a lot of Americans saying, I suspect we're going to embark on a different course in Iraq. That may be unfounded thinking.
I don't know. I would discourage you from trying to leap to peremptory conclusions about what's going to happen.
About what's going to happen. So, in other words, no matter what anybody in the Iraq study group says, or what his dad's new Secretary of Defense says, or what his dad says, or what the voters say, Bush is determined to stay with the killing. This is a psychopath. This is a man that needs to be as gently and as legally and constitutionally as possible taken out of office. Something has got to happen here to get this nutball out of control. So another reporter tries to find out from Snow Job. No time for this one? All right, we'll get this one coming back. We've got two or three more, and then we'll go to your phone calls. I know this has taken almost two-thirds of the program, but it's just fascinating to me to listen to it, I'm assuming, since we're all in this together, that it's fascinating to you, too. Jesus, I can't believe some of the stuff I'm hearing. And it gets worse with snow here, so stick around.
Must not and will not allow the world's worst leaders to hold the United States and our friends and allies blackmail.
Jesus. All right. Before we finish up the sound bites, I just got this from a friend, from Sheila. Written by a woman in Iraq, Layla Anwar, December 5th, 2006. I've been feeling numb lately. I get phone calls, I hear the news, I watch pictures, I read articles, and I remain unmoved. Visitors pass by and recount to me horror stories, and I just stare at them. I nod and blink my eyes, but when I open my mouth to speak, the words are stuck somewhere deep in my throat. I'm past being shocked anymore. I have resigned myself to this state of paralysis. Ghost cities like Baghdad with its pools of blood don't affect me. Raped little girls are part of my daily scenery. An unknown limb lying in the street is not even an object of curiosity. Smashed jaws, teeth, eyes, nails pulled out are nothing but sentences for me, anonymous black and white images. Barren towns, abandoned children, families executed, hospitals raided, lethal injections given to those belonging to the wrong sect are routine. And routine gets deadly boring. A habit-forming addiction. Rampant drugs, prostitution, pimps, and killers from the underworld have resurfaced from the wombs of this city, and I watch it all like a horror film, so detached, so close, so far away. The palm tree has faded into a dirty brown. The dates have turned to stones. The earth is scorched, smoky black, and the water has turned into a crimson red. This desolation leaves me anesthetized. My fingers are paralyzed. My thoughts rigidified at point zero. My feelings frozen. I am a robot now. A product of this apocalyptic nihilism. I go through the regular motions only to retreat into my autistic world and stare into the void of destruction. Yes, I am in this mode now, a Frankenstein zombie-like mode. And during the rare moments when I feel I still belong to something remotely human again, in those instances of lucidity, I may catch a tear or two frozen on my cheek. I wipe them quickly away lest the machine that I have become rusts and no longer functions. And in those moments, with my plastified smile fixed to my face like a scar, in those small moments when something alive nudges me and I dare to look at it, I see that hope has become an oxymoron, fear a good companion, anger deep down in a well, and torrents of grief abundant enough to wash the bloody streets of Baghdad. That's what we've done. Back to Tony Snow. Another reporter tries to find out what exactly is the point to changing defense secretaries and consulting the Iraq Study Group if Bush is just going to keep killing in Iraq. The reporter says, some of the excerpts of the study group's report we've seen so far have called for phased troop withdrawal, and Bob Gates says that we're not winning the war in Iraq. Are you concerned about the expectations that have built up over the past few weeks?
We haven't built them up. You guys have to answer for that.
The expectations are out there. What I'm saying is, are you concerned that anything short of an embracing of the recommendations will be viewed as obstinance by the White House?
Well, if it is, I'm going to put that on your shoulders, because that will mean that there has been an attempt. When you have a White House that invites people in, that provides complete and full access.
What?
That has, in fact, been welcoming of the approach. I think it is a disservice to the Baker-Hamilton Commission and to this administration and to public discourse to try to argue that attempts to take a fresh look at a program are really attempts to knock down an administration or to cast doubt on the mission.
Jesus, God, these are demons from hell. Trust me. Trust me. What the hell is the mission again, Tony? Oh, yeah. To succeed in Iraq. Tony Snow is just as delusional as this freak in the White House. Talking about an open White House? What did he say when you have a White House that invites people in that provides complete and full access? What the hell is he talking about? Okay, bring on Robert Gates. We know you're a liar. We know you're a sneak. We know you traded weapons hoping that hostages would be freed, but at least you gave the weapons to the Iranians. Maybe you're not rotten to the core. I don't know. But take a shot, Gates. See if you can make things better. Because you damn sure can't make them any worse. Barren towns, abandoned children, families executed, hospitals raided, lethal injections given to those belonging to the wrong sect are routine. I'm past being shocked anymore. I've resigned myself to this state of paralysis. Ghost cities like Baghdad with its pools of blood don't affect me. Raped little girls are part of my daily scenery. An unknown limb lying in the street is not even an object of curiosity. Smashed jaws, teeth, eyes, nails pulled out are nothing but sentences for me.
anonymous black and white images. Welcome back, about 7 past the hour. Email from Don. Hi, Mike. Really enjoy your broadcast. I wonder how the senior generals in our military can tolerate the policies in Iraq of this Bush cabal. Any chance of them rebelling or mutinous behavior? The quick answer is no. If the security or the territorial integrity of the United States were being threatened because of the policies of some freak like George W. Bush, yes, then I think... there would be a mutiny or a rebellion. As long as the nation being destroyed because of the policies of these sick bastards who run the United States is not this nation, the military, the generals are not going to get into a position where they even question civilian leadership, much less rebel or go into a state of mutiny. It would take some sort of conflict in this country, and they would have to feel that I'm just guessing here, they would have to feel that the policies of the president at the time were such that the country was going to fall. Then I think there would be some sort of rebellion against those policies. All right, last two from the briefing today and then to your phone calls. Still another reporter tries to figure out how, if Bush and Gates are on the same page as Tony Snow says, how Bush can say we're winning and Gates can say, well, he didn't say we're losing, he said we're not winning. Yet Tony Snow claims there's no difference between them. The problem is that the reporter, like most of us normal people, just doesn't speak crazy the way these people do. So the reporter says, can I follow up on that, Tony? Mr. Gates was asked an up or down question, is the United States winning? His answer was no. The last time the president was asked this question, his answer was absolutely yes. So Gates says that we're not winning the war in Iraq, and you say the president doesn't see a major difference with him on that?
What I would suggest is, number one, I know that you want to pit a fight between Bob Gates and the president. Doesn't exist. Read the full testimony and you'll see.
The president were asked that same question today. Would he say absolutely?
I'm not going to tell you what the president would say, but you can look at the president's answer and you can look at Bob Gates. What I would also suggest, though, is you take a look at the Gates testimony and you see if that's consistent with what we've been talking about. Because what you're going to try to take is that one little question. The Iraqis, no, I'll finish here in a moment. It's not a filibuster, but I'm trying to wrap up the answer. That in fact, you see also the increased willingness and success in actions, for instance, against al-Qaeda and Anbar and also within Baghdad. There are a lot of things going on. So, you know, when you ask a steady-state question, you're trying to treat it as a portrait in an unchanging situation. In fact, it's a pretty dynamic situation. There are a lot of things going on, a lot of things that the Iraqis themselves say give them heart and confidence and determination. They know something.
They know something. Jesus, God in heaven. This is unbelievable. This is unbelievable. Bush says we're winning. Gates says we're not winning. The reporter says, isn't there a difference there, Tony? Well, you can look at the president's answer. You can look at Bob Gates. What I would also suggest, though, is you take a look at the Gates testimony and you see that it's consistent with what we've been talking about, because what you're going to try to take is that one little question. You bastard! That one little question! Oh, my God. Finally. This one really needs no introduction except to say that Tony Snow is officially now through the looking glass. He's lost his mind to very, very bad acid. Losing is winning in backward Bush bizarro world. The reporter begins, and you have to listen closely to this. Tony, does the president today believe that we are winning in Iraq? That's a very straightforward question.
I did not ask him the question today. The most recently asked, he said yes. Again, go back and take a look at the broader answer that Bob Gates gave and ask yourself, is this consistent or inconsistent with what the president's been saying? I think you're going to find it's very consistent.
Why is it consistent if he...
His statement is inconsistent with what the administration said. The president has said, we are winning. You from that podium said, we're winning,
right,
but we haven't won.
Right.
He said... He agreed that we are not winning. So how is that?
And he also said we're not losing. So what you may have are two guys who are looking at different definitions. I don't know. I don't want to try to read their minds.
Okay. It's time for us to stop now before your humble and obedient servant, moi, before my brain melts and starts to run out my ears. This is enough to drive anyone totally mad, totally insane. This makes a mockery of Big Brother. This a real mockery. At least in Orwell's novel, there was consistency. It was very clear. 2 + 2 = 5 when I tell you it's 5. But in this instance, Tony Snow stands there and says, there is no difference between saying we're winning and we're losing. It's all the same. And there's a quantitative difference between the two. Or qualitative, excuse me. 2 + 2 can be 5. It can. If enough pressure is applied to the cerebral cortex. But when George Bush says we're winning and Robert Gates says we are not winning, there is no way that O'Brien can turn up the voltage to make Winston Smith really believe that he heard the same thing from both people. It can't be done. It's madness. See, I told you this was going to be insane tonight. It's absolutely insane. So what do you think? Should Gates be confirmed? Or no, he's already, it's a done deal. Let me rephrase it, because we're going to come to your phone calls now. Some of you people have been holding on for over 2 hours. Oh, God, wait till we see the phone bill. Will Gates' confirmation matter? All right, let's start with Will in Michigan. All right, Will, what's the answer to that question? Will his nomination, will his confirmation matter?
I don't think so.
Oh, God.
Yeah, the old joke back in during the Reagan years was McDonald's and the White House have something in common. They both have clowns named Ronald.
Yeah,
changed, but the garbage is the same.
Well, what do you think Gates is going to do?
I don't know. Frankly, he scares me. Anybody that's got a CIA background has no business running the Pentagon.
You think?
I mean, that's how you wind up with death squads, which we've already got anyway, but...
No. Yeah, I was going to say something witty, but I better not. Something about, well, they can always be improved upon. But, you know, not only do we have death squads, but as you know, Will, we have torture chambers. We have rendition prisons where we snatch people anywhere on the planet and put them in dark holes and beat them and torture them. Hold on a second, Will. We'll come back after the break. I've got to do a break and some commercials here. Stay with us. This is Nova M Radio.
Take a rocket to the stars for a back rub, romantic rendezvous. In your engine, on your face, or almost any place, a little dab of oil will get you through. Oh, I go anywhere to fight for oil, to lubricate the red, white, and blue.
For a place to attack, why not attack Iraq? They've got coconut and palm oil and crude. They invaded Kuwait, so let's not hesitate. We can blow up a country or two. If it's oil or it's Greece, we don't have time for peace. Waging war is what we want to do. Oh, I'd go anywhere to fight for oil.
No doubt his hatred is mainly directed at us. After all, this is the guy that tried to kill my dad.
And you know why Bush is punishing Saddam? Because he didn't succeed. Back to Will in Michigan. All right, Will, thanks for holding on again.
Mike, I read on Raw's story this morning that Levin wasn't even going to bring up Iran-Contra in the hearings today, which I think is disgusting myself. I mean,
well, it is. It is to people like you and me, to people who would like to see some sort of accountability at some point in the history of this country for some of the murderous atrocities that have been committed in the name of the American people. I don't think those days of reckoning will ever come. It's never come where it's concerned African slaves. It's never come where it's concerned indigenous people in this country when we white people first got here. So, it's never come where it concerns Vietnam. Why should it come where it concerns Central America? Given that reality, why should Levin, and I'm being Malloy the cynic here, why should Levin even bring it up? Levin voted against this guy to be CIA chief, 15 years ago, or 20 years ago? Hell, I don't know, a long time ago, Levin voted against this guy. Today he voted for him. What does that mean? Does it mean that Levin is convinced that Gates has had some sort of epiphany where he sees what has happened under Rumsfeld's control? Or does it mean that Levin doesn't care anymore? Or does it mean that Levin just wants to see Rumsfeld the hell out of town? I don't know. I have no idea. So the fact that Levin didn't bring up, except in a minor chord, very, very low key, anything about Iran-Contra, I think is an indication. In the first place, let me ask you something, Will. How many people do you suppose, if you went to downtown Lansing tomorrow and stop people on the street of any age and said, what do you know about Iran-Contra? How many of those people, Will, do you think would give you an answer that would satisfy you?
Not very many.
One out of 1,000?
Probably
zero.
Maybe one out of 10 if I'm lucky.
Right. So Levin not bringing up Iran-Contra is... it makes perfect sense to me. Who cares? That was 200,000 lives back in the 80s. That's a done deal. That's over. Those people have already rotted and gone back to the soil. It doesn't matter. And Daniel Ortega was just elected president of Nicaragua. It doesn't matter. That's why I didn't bring it up.
One last thing, Mike, to get my email I sent you last night. I'm going to be going to a big conference in Atlanta next summer. Like to meet you in person if I could.
We'll see. I don't know if I trust you completely. I'm very reluctant about meeting people. We'll figure out something. Stay in touch. All right, Will?
All right.
Thanks, man. I appreciate you checking in. Brett is calling from Santa Rosa, California. Hey, Brett.
Hi, Mike. Great show. And I just wanted to put in a little bit of a plug. You mentioned a couple of websites earlier.
Yeah.
About the Coffee Yard. And I actually had seen a film that Aaron Rousseau had put out called America, Freedom to Fascism.
Yeah, that's a good film.
Yeah, he's done a terrific job. I don't know if you're familiar with his history. He was a big producer in Hollywood. He put out Bette Midler, The Rose, and Trading Places with Eddie Murphy. So, you know, this isn't some, you know, somebody just no name putting something together. He's put years of work into this. And that's something that I think if the American public could get up to speed on that, it would really help awaken the masses, you might say. So
you want to get that?
Yeah, I just wanted to point that out. If you can get, you know, go to Google, you can check it out for free.
Aaron Rousseau.
Yeah, Aaron Rousseau, America, Freedom to Fascism. And like I said, it's on the top 100 of Google 100 videos right now.
Okay.
But it gets into the, you know, the bankers back in 1913 with the Federal Reserve and all that good stuff. So gives a real great history of what's going on.
It is. It's great history. It's a fascinating film.
Yeah.
I hope people check it out.
Yeah. Appreciate it, Mike.
All right, Brett. Thank you. Take care. We'll talk again. Alan is calling from Miami. Is it time for a break? Alan, hold on. We'll come right back to Alan and then Wayne and then Virginia. See, we're working our way through. All you folks have been very, very patient tonight. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
Tonight, how much he hates these people. It's more Mike Malloy.
It's 25 before the hour. Alan in Miami. Hey, Alan.
Hi, how you doing?
Doing fine, sir. How are you?
Well, before you were talking about the Middle East and everything, and I hate to say it, you know, in public airwaves, but we don't do democracy here either, or not very well, not for a long time, and we've even lost perspective of what it means and what it looks like when it's here. And what it looks like when it's threatened or attacked. We just had a whole several month long run up to a political campaign and an election. And now we have the aftermath of the election. And never once was it brought up that, hey, folks, this election is important because our entire system is under attack by the very people that have taken over the government themselves. Now, we've used impeachment here. to attack personal habits of leaders. But the idea that now, when you have criminals and would-be dictators pulling the country in directions that nobody has ever asked for, and that includes the whole corporatization of America, where decisions about employment and wages and everything else, and you name it, has been made by small circles that never ask or care about the opinion of the American people. When this is under attack, our elected officials are supposed to use impeachment because that's what it's made for.
That's right.
And now, and the debate about whether we should, it's not a question of whether it's politically viable or not. It's the remedy that is needed, and these elected officials are accomplices to the crimes if they don't use the tools that are there to save our democracy. But if nobody even has the discourse, this kind of Alice in Wonderland circus that went on in the Congress today, nobody talks about the 14 bases, which is the real reason we're there. You know it, and I know it. We're talking about everything except this 800-pound gorilla in the room. They're just trying to find a means, in spite of all the problems that went on, is to stay longer. Not to stay longer to help the Iraqis or smooth anything out or prevent a civil war, but to stay there to make sure we don't lose that investment of all those people who built all those places over there, and so that we don't lose that thread of the PNAC group that still wants to continue on dominating the sector of the world and the resources. So I don't know. We're talking about everything except what's really happening. And to put our faith in the Democrats, every 2 years and every 4 years they come along and they, you know, they ask people to knock on doors and make phone calls. And sure, you want to get rid of those people who are in charge right now, but just to change seats without changing the discourse or the debate that something is wrong in America doesn't help us anywhere. And now we have these people in there who are, they're dancing around. They're afraid to go this way or go that way. They're preening themselves for the 2008 election already, but where is the discussion about how do citizens get to participate in their government again? Now, I happen to be a dedicated Green at this point because I can't find any other place in the political spectrum to exist. I think people who spend time constantly trying to reform that ossifying organization that's tied to the purse strings, to the same purse strings as the Republicans, is sadly, I think it's wasting their time. I'm not saying Greens are necessarily the answer, but I think if we don't start thinking in terms of forming new organizations and new types of participation, we're lost.
What do you see as a possible answer here in the short term?
In the short term, I think we have to start thinking, tell people that it's not enough to just vote in the short term. What we have to do is, if you care at all about this country, if you care at all about this democracy, you have got to realize that your life has got to change. You have to start participating either in organizations or in discussions with friends, neighbors, relatives, and so forth. Go to organizations, go to a cocktail party or a party of some friends. Talk about what's going on in the world. Talk about how your voice has diminished. Talk about meaningful things. I know it goes completely against where mainstream is pointing and everything else, but if we don't start doing it and thinking of new forms of organization, as I said, one of my options is I've gotten involved with the Greens, and as a long shot as that is, certainly it feels good to be trying to form a new organization that is not afraid to talk out about impeachment, it's not afraid to talk about having lost our democracy and having to find it. A discussion to how to have a rebirth of democracy in this nation. So there or elsewhere, I think people have to start doing stuff, talking. To think that somehow the answer is miraculously going to fall out of the Democratic Party, it's a game. It goes back and forth between the Republicans and Democrats. That's the game they play, and we always lose.
You made some excellent points. The idea of to continue talking is something that we talked about earlier on the program tonight, because we had a caller last night from Arizona named Leonard who felt like he wasn't doing anything, and he felt like Mike Newcomb and I were, because we were talking, and I pointed out to him, and I think several of the listeners pointed out to him, that he's doing just as much as we are. He just doesn't have a microphone, but it doesn't matter. And you're making the same point, to engage people. To keep talking. Pink Floyd had, it was from one of their albums, I think, Division Bell or whatever, but there's a tune on there about Keep on Talking. And the point, you know, I hate to use rock and roll references, but what the hell? Why not?
That's fine. Yeah.
Yeah. Why not? And the point is yes, you're making the point is to keep talking. The certain community in this country over the past 20 years has had a very pertinent slogan: silence equals death. And mm-hmm. and I think that applies now more than ever to anyone who believes in representative democracy like we're supposed to believe. So you keep talking and keep calling. All right, Alan?
I certainly will. I appreciate what you're doing. Your voice is extremely important.
Well, so
and this venue is. This venue that you create, let's say that.
All right. Well, thanks a lot. I appreciate it, Alan. Take care.
Sure.
Take care. You have a nice evening. Yeah, silence is death. And whether that applies to discussions about HIV/AIDS or it applies to discussions about representative government in this country or applies to not allowing business as usual to continue is, I think, is the point. Wayne, excuse me, Wayne is calling from Boston. Hey, Wayne.
Hey, Mike. That call really hit the nail on the coffin.
Yeah, really.
But the new slogan is, what we want to win, is the only one that the only people that are winning are the 100,000 contractors in Iraq. C-SPAN reported this today. I've been following this thing from the start, and you know they're using this excuse, well, we can't leave because it would be major chaos.
Yeah. What the hell is going on there now?
They want the chaos. They want to keep it just like it is. Those people will never follow that government. They're all exiles. They're all marked for death. And hiding it. They have them in that green zone. That's all the green zone politicians.
Well, I hear you, Wayne. Is anything you want to add to that?
You made a good point about this is just like the Poland. They took the Nazi propaganda playbook, and that's what they're using.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right. All right, thanks, Wayne.
All right.
Take care. Take care. Virginia is calling from Alameda, California. Hey, Virginia.
How you doing, sweetheart? I've been working my butt off during the... can I say that?
You just did.
I'm sorry. I worked my behind off with MoveOn.org trying to get, you know, the Democrats elected, like Webb and all of them.
Uh-huh.
And now they're, like, looking for us to go running out there and take pictures of people and sign petitions. And I have to tell you, Mike, I'm sick of it. I am sick of petitions. I'm sick of letters. I'm sick of letters to the editor. I'm sick of letters to my congressman. I'm sick of demonstrations. I am sick of it. We did not get a thing changed back in the day when we were in Nam until they were afraid of who? The Weather Underground, the SLA, the Black Panthers, the Young Lords, the people who would not go to school, the people who would not go sit in their classes, the people who wouldn't even let classes happen in universities across the country. Mm-hmm. There is nothing. We're going to talk till we die and we're going to burst a vein, wasting our time, yada, yada, yada.
Right,
if we do not get in the streets, if we do not stop business as usual, this is not going to end, and we're going to get taken down. Because this is not acceptable to anyone, anywhere in the rest of the world, civilized or not.
Okay,
no one is in agreement with what we're doing.
I got to take a break, and when we come back, I want to ask you what should we do? All right, because
all right,
I never have any answers. Maybe you've got one. All right, stay right there.
Then.
And think about it. What should we do? This is Nova M. I'm Mike Malloy.
Sit up and pay attention. Stand up for what you believe in. Speak up. Shake up.
about 10 before the hour. Thanks to the crew again tonight. Ian Huff engineered the program in Phoenix and also answered your calls. Chris in Minnesota is our senior correspondent. Mark Marshall, our webmaster. Thanks to the militant mods at MikeMalloy.com on the message board. Ben Birch, White Rose Society, archives the program. The executive producer is Catherine Bay. Now, I want to go back to Virginia, who's called in from Alameda. All right, what should we do?
What should we do? We have to stop letting them just. They're only waiting for us to keep on doing these passive things. We have to stop being passive. We did not get affirmative action. We didn't get civil rights. We didn't get the end of the war by writing letters. We had to be willing to be arrested in mass. And that's the only way it is ever going to change. We have to make such a fuss and so many innocent people locked up, facing bail, facing jail time, facing guns and police. That's the scene that made people get up and say, wait a minute, this is wrong. Because folks are paralyzed, and the only thing that makes people get up and do something when they're paralyzed is a crisis. And the crisis has to be home. So it does. It has to be right here. If you could do us a favor, we have Bechtel in San Francisco. Find all the Halliburton. Find all the contractors. Make life hell for them. Do not let them do their business. The universities, what is going on in the colleges? Nothing. Why are we not seeing the mess that we had at Kent and the mess that we had everywhere else? Because folks are just sitting there writing letters and having, you know, conferences and chatting, but you have to be willing to lose your freedom for people
to see the example. Now, you understand, and you obviously are intelligent, and I'm sure you understand that what you're asking is for people to somehow find motivation. And I got to tell you, Virginia, if the bulk of America is not motivated to do the things that you're suggesting, with which I completely agree. If they're not motivated by now, and whether it's about the Iraq War and the death and destruction or the shredding of the U.S. Constitution, if they're not motivated now to take these risks, to do what you're suggesting, to risk jail,
Doesn't have to be the whole mass, Mike. The thing I'm saying is that, you know, somebody has to start. Medea Benjamin should not be the only one. The women in pink should not be the only ones. These people should not be the only ones. We have to come to an agreement with just 10 or 20 friends. And when 10 or 20 of us are locked up, another 10 or 20 go, wait a minute, that's wrong. We're going to the next demonstration. They can either let them go or we're going in too. And that's all it takes, over and over.
You understand that I completely agree with you, but I guess the question...
No one is starting, and I don't understand why, Mike. I don't get it. I don't get why the women in pink and these people are getting arrested, and no one is doing, you know, everyone just stands there. Over here, we had a bunch of demonstrations at Bechtel, and no one wanted to be arrested except when the big demonstration was going on. It can't be... We think that, you know, some huge demonstration is going to change something, and we seem to be waiting for it. We have to understand, and y'all who have the mic have to be able to say to people over and over again, it just takes a few of you to get it started. That's all it takes. If you're thinking about it, do it.
Well,
put
you
on
know,
your website
do you,
where to get the lawyers to, you know, help you when you're in there.
But you know why I don't do that? Because unless I am willing to walk out of the studio and walk out of my family and go be one of the people in the front of the line to get my head cracked, to get the tear gas, which has happened to me, whether it was anti-war or civil rights, to go to jail, which I've done in the anti-nuke movement, unless I'm willing to do that, which apparently I'm not, because if I were willing to do it, I would have done it by now. And my point is, I think it is.
Honey,
the
you don't have to do it.
Okay, but wait. Let me finish this.
Put it out there.
This is important to me. It's impossible for me to suggest
to really suggest, or, well, I can suggest, but to push people to do something that I'm not prepared to do myself. My excuse is, been there, done that, got the T-shirt. It's time for the new generation to step up. But when I listen to John Lewis here in Atlanta, or when I listen to other people who were revolutionaries in their time, I realize that what I'm saying is a piss poor excuse for inaction. So I can talk about it, but I can't lay that on somebody when I'm not doing it myself. Do you understand what the dilemma that I have there?
I understand that you feel that's a moral dilemma, and I really respect you for at least, you know, thinking about it, because a whole lot of people have been doing the talking and not doing the walking and sitting there doing the time. But, you know, like you said, you did it. You don't have to do it again. You have a family. But we have tons and tons of people in America who could spare a week or two in jail. They really could.
You remember, I'm sure, how hard it was to motivate people to risk tear gas and a clubbing and dogs and fire hoses and jail.
Yeah, it was really hard. But then when people, you know, when a small group kept doing it over and over again, and, you know, more and more of their friends kept on going, wait a minute, this is just completely insane. We can't just let them be out there on their own. Someone has to start it. All it takes is a starter. And once the starter is out there, it will gather its momentum. Because people, have you ever heard people calling you and sending you so many emails so fed up and disgusted that they're, you know, just paralyzed and completely? If we don't move, we are losing this country. We are losing this country, and they're going to be at every corner, on every corner. My people are from Puerto Rico, and I'm going to tell you that when I go home and I go to the ghettos, there are police that look like military.
I hear you. Virginia, I want you to call again, but we're out of time now. What you said is real powerful. I appreciate what you said. Take care. We'll talk again. All right? I'll see you tomorrow night. Thanks for participating in the program, however you did that. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is NOVAM Radio.